It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie's here. Andy Nocco's here. Big, big, big news story where we're all over the new WPA2 crack details coming up and what Apple's doing about it. We'll also talk about the iPhone 10 and what it represents for Apple going forward. And when are they going to update the Mac Mini? It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 580, recorded Tuesday, October 17th, 2017. Schrodinger's Mac Mini. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device at gazelle.com today. And buy video blocks from Storyblocks. Uncage your creativity and get all the stock video you need for only $149 a year. Visit videoblocks.com/MacBreak to save on millions of studio quality clips from Videoblocks. And buy Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple with our crack team of analysts, or our cracked team of analysts, depending on your point of view. Andy Anaka from the Chicago Sun-Times. Great to see you, Andrew.
Hello. I think of myself more as a brand influencer than a thought leader. There's more money in it.
Yes, I'm an early adopter. I'm afraid I don't influence anything. Also here, Renee, except that when I adopt it, then they could discontinue it. Renee Ritchie is also here from iMore.com. Ooh, you moved the camera around a little bit.
I had to. I was staging where I live, so I had to like move all this stuff around to make the rooms look more open.
Are you selling the place?
I might be. I'm considering it. Okay. I'm looking into it, Leo.
I actually like this view because I've never seen your beautiful movie posters before.
I'm an early adapter. I just take whatever is new and try my best to live with it.
That's good. It's all about the watch bands, baby.
No, it looks like you and I would have exactly the same sort of like thinking that, okay, I'm going to leave like the office exactly the way it is, and therefore the realtor can say, and do you have like a 10 to 16 year old boy? Well, this is what his bedroom would look like.
So true. I laugh because it's true.
Yes. So we are now in the slump period, kind of in between the release of the Apple Watch Series 3, the Apple TV HD or 4K, the iPhone 8, and waiting for the iPhone 10, 10 days away from the launch.
How close, Leo?
We could start the countdown.
I can almost taste it.
There isn't. I mean, it's funny because once the 10 was announced, that ended the rumor mill. So there aren't any.
There's iPhone 9 rumors already, Leo.
Yeah, we have to. What will they do, by the way?
iPhone X2, iPhone United.
What will they remove from the iPhone 10?
I think that the screen, Andy, the screen.
Yeah.
We're close to being able to remove the Lightning port, right? Because then you'd have no holes at all. And just
There was rumors that Google would do that this year with the Pixel, but they didn't. They only went part of the way. So
what do you think? Mm. Is that an homage to delete the headphone jack?
You've heard. Right, go ahead, Andy.
I keep coming back to the analogy of the first airline to charge baggage fees for checked bags.
Yep.
It's not as though it had to happen, and somebody had to have. When you talk about courage, you talk about let's have the courage to see if we can get away with this. And then once everyone else found out that it's not like touching the third rail, it gave a lot of other companies and other designers to say, well, it would make our lives simpler, the designers simpler if we didn't have to mess with a headphone jack. And particularly when you're building an Android phone, when you know that you will not be essentially killing everybody's access to a headphone jack everywhere. And if anything, you could say that, oh, see, look how modern we are. We're even more like the iPhone than the last Android phone to copy the iPhone.
Yes, so, exactly. Oh, well. The point Ron Amadio made in his review of the new Pixel 2s, he said this doesn't benefit end users, but it is of benefit to the manufacturers. Renee, what were you going to say?
It's not like we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. We all had HTC phones 10 years ago that got rid of the headphone jack and had these weird little dongles. I think the HTC G1, the first Google phone, was like that.
But that was a day when we didn't really put a lot of music on our phones. That was
Totally. Yeah, yeah. But there were rumors that that maybe Google now or some other manufacturer, a lot of manufacturers seem to want to be able to get rid of all buttons and get rid of all ports, get rid of every possible point of hardware failure, because it'll make the phones either more durable or they'll be able to make them these little, you know, perfectly sealed bricks. That'll just last longer. And it seems like a trend in the industry. I guess this stuff has to go away at some point. The only thing with the Pixel is that they didn't include They didn't include USB headphones in it. And Apple did include Lightning headphones. So it makes that a little bit more painful for people.
Yeah, that was definitely a mistake, particularly given the price of the Pixel XL. Also, particularly given that Apple has some excuses, can rely on some excuses, in that they are shipping overall like 10 million of these a quarter, whereas Google's ambitions are as big as Apple's, but their shipping quantities are about 1/10 of that. So they can make decisions based on shipping 800,000 units a quarter or even 500,000 units a quarter and make that stick. It's so you kind of ask yourself, why didn't they try to make this one of the best $800 to $900 phones on the market today? I like so much of what I've seen from it so far, but it's so simple to just include the damn dongle in the box, particularly when you know how much hassle it's going to create for people.
Johnny Ive interviewed at the iPhone launch by a Japanese fashion and design site, Brutus Casa, figures that Johnny would give the interview to a Japanese fashion and design site. Here's some of the quotes. This is from 9 to 5 Mac. Before this, there was a feeling that individual components called enclosure, housing, and display existed. What we always wanted to do is tackle the essence of integrating what we consider different parts. Looking at the iPhone X from that perspective, I think it took many years, and we were finally able to achieve it. So the idea that it's a unitary object, a single slab of glass, as opposed to individual components, you know, screwed together. He then said, we have a lot more big ideas, and we're already working on them. Rather than one ending of the iPhone, it's rather a new chapter and the beginning of its development. So I think he's really saying, and I guess this explains the naming a little bit and answers maybe the question of what's going to happen next year. If there is an iPhone 9, it'll be a continuation of the existing line. But
I think that's come to an end. I think that might be the end of it, the new beginning. Yeah.
So there won't be a 9. There'll be whatever X, the second X, is. Asked whether there was a pressure to release the new design by the 10th anniversary of the phone, he agreed there was, but claimed ultimately it was a wonderful coincidence. Well, haha, just for the design team and engineer team, if you try to do a good job, there's always pressure. I understand that what is expected is a change, but what we're trying to keep in mind is always do the best job as much as possible. Given the years taken to develop the iPhone X, it was a truly wonderful coincidence. So it isn't really the 10th.
Last year they would have.
Yeah, it's not really the 10th anniversary iPhone. It's the next chapter for iPhone.
Yeah.
So in what regard is it the next chapter?
It takes a lot of the things that we're super familiar to, like what made an iPhone, like iconically, what made an iPhone was that home button. You even saw it in the little tiny glyphs that they used in all their products. And it throws a lot of that away. It tries to introduce some new paradigms, but it really is a rethinking of what Apple's whole design language for those mobile devices is going to be.
Also, I think it's a continuation of what started with 3D Touch, which is the ability to kind of create more functionality without creating more physical clicky buttons or in obvious interfaces on the surface. Because when you think about it, when you have a home button, you have a home button everywhere. And that used to be seen as a huge advantage, that no matter how confused you get within the interface, there's always that emergency eject button that'll bounce you all the way back to the home screen. Volume buttons are always exactly where you're supposed to be. The power or whatever they're calling it right now button is always where it's supposed to be. I think they're moving towards a place where they can essentially create any surface to do any control that they want to put in, which means that they can create they can really change what an iPhone is in 5 years without having to change the entire body design, without having to train people on this is why there is a section of the top part of the bezel that you can stroke from left to right, and it also responds to a press and swipe up. It's basically just like the removal of the physical keyboard from the phone meant that if you didn't want to use that part of the screen for a keyboard, if you wanted it to use it as like a video scrub controller, it could be a video scrub controller. So it really makes it into a more abstract device.
It's a challenge, though, because you have now a whole bunch of applications that are designed around the notion that you're going to have an exit with the home button.
Yeah.
And they... I mean, that's one of the things I don't like about the iPhone is that the applications don't have an exit.
It's mostly abstracted, though. Like the same thing with Face ID and Touch ID is that it's a bio-authentication API, and it just happens to be surfaced in different ways. And there are exit APIs that, you know, when you press the home button, the app goes into hibernation and does these things. And when you swipe up, all of that internally, my understanding is that's all the same. So from an app development point of view and the API point of view, it's identical. It's just a new mechanic that you'll learn.
You don't have people like me. Only the user changes, not the app.
Yeah, and people like me who love like WebOS, I love that up gesture on their iOS. I found it really natural. I was within 3 minutes at the iPhone event. I was just swiping up to stop everything or to move everything on the iPhone X.
Okay. Yeah. So that's going to be the question, and you've played with it, so you can somewhat answer that. Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah. I do wonder if there's going to be, I wouldn't call it blowback, but if there's going to be a generation of designers who sort of get bored by the lack of physical features on the device, and they go back and their inspiration will be taken from modern cars that are super electronic, but they also want to make sure that the shift knob has this really pleasing tactile feel to it when you're moving from first to second, or even being inspired by a Curta calculator, which is certainly not as fast as any modern calculator, but there's something very pleasantly tactile as you set the levers and you rotate it to get the answer, or even my favorite HP calculators, the kind that has that sort of parallelogram like keys that had like two or three surfaces on top of them, the way that you press into them and they just really feed back in a really lovely way. I'm just wondering if designers often go from an emotional point of view because they're selling based on emotional features. It's not just what this phone or what this device can do. It's how it makes you feel when you use it. And perhaps in a world in which people are less and less sure of what's going on around them and about their level of power and control, maybe there might be a line of thought that says that we're not going to make this thing just studded with buttons, but let's have a couple of really nice buttons on there that attack very important features that are nonetheless very attractive to hold and push and fidget with when you have this thing in your hand. I just think it gets kind of boring when you just have, oh, look, it's another flat rectangle with rounded edges with no buttons whatsoever. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
It's nothing bad about it, but the thing that stands out is the thing that's different. Just like the iPhone stood out because it was a wonderful innovation compared to other phones, but also stood out because, my goodness, I can see I've got this entire screen that's not being cluttered with mechanical interface anymore. So when your entire world is glass interfaces, the machine that just decides to put you this, give you this really nice, dare I say, you know, handgun style mechanical metal switch on the side that does something that's critical to the function of the thing, that gets you interested in a world where you're using most people are using phones for the same things no matter what platform they're using.
Louis Mantia will save us all, Andy.
I think, Andy, you're channeling Johnny Ive exactly. And of course, people like us who obsessively pay attention to the details will, you know, have a different reaction perhaps than somebody who's spent the last 7-10 years accustomizing themselves to how an iPhone works. And one of the things with the iPhone, one of the real advantages the iPhone had is, unlike Android, there really was, you know, one way to do it, and you just did it that way, and you really could have the muscle memory develop over time, and you knew how to use it.
Like they kept iPhone 8 on the market the same year, so you have that choice. It's not like previous years where, oh, suddenly all the phones are big and I like smaller phones and Apple screwed me and left me alone and it took 18 months to get an iPhone SE. Right. Now it's like I really love the home button. All I want is a better, faster phone with a better camera. Why can't – oh, it's there. I can buy that. I don't have to have this change of version. I'll have the iPhone that I'm comfortable with. I can watch other people be victimized by this home buttonless phone. And then maybe next year I'll take a look at it and see
how
I feel.
Do you think Johnny doesn't expect – or Apple doesn't expect ever, you know, a lot of people to buy the 10? The 10 is for a particular and relatively small audience for an iPhone.
Oh, and plus they can't make they can't make iPhone scale.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But absolutely.
So they're okay with that though, because it's a special it's the early adopter phone. It's almost a I think beta.
Yeah, and I think that Apple wouldn't have a philosophically, I don't think Apple would have a problem doing something that is so radically different as the iPhone 10 from the iPhone 7. And I think that if they could get those 3D dot projectors at scale, not sure if they would have done the iPhone 8, or at least not in the way that they've done it right now. But Apple is definitely in a position, though, where they have to deal with they're not the phone for the rest of us. They are, I think, the single most popular individual make of phone out there right now, which means that there are a lot of people who simply walk into a store. They say, I've got $673. I want a good phone. Show me the three good phones that to the average consumer's perception are almost identical to each other. Okay, there's something that no one can predict that made me want phone B instead of phone A or phone C. Thank you very much. And then they completely forget about their choice. So there are going to be those people that are really going to be coming in not wanting to have it explained to them how Face ID works. They don't want to have it explained to them why there's a tab at the top of the screen. They don't want to have it explained to them why do videos look a little bit funny from their point of view. They just, again, they walk in with a dead phone. They want to walk out with a good phone. So Apple has to make sure that they take care of those customers' needs as well.
Or even a seven.
Yeah, I mean, right. Yeah, it's really hard to explain to people the difference between the 7 and the 8. We're not trying to convince people to buy the 8 instead of the 7, but you really have to ask them a few serious questions before telling them, well, you know what, if you've got an iPhone 5, I think you're going to be blown away by the iPhone 7. If you want to be blown away plus another $100 by the iPhone 8, go for it. But I think
carriers. Some carriers are subsidizing the 8 way more than
you're
7,
kidding,
which
really?
Is counterintuitive.
Oh,
yeah.
That's interesting.
My father got a way better deal on an 8 than he got on a 7.
Huh, I wonder why they're doing that. So it makes sense then that Apple doesn't mind that the low production numbers on an iPhone 10. But what bothers me a little bit is the 10 that different? I understand it. You know, we've said this over and over again. Apple's got to look for the next big thing, the successor to the iPhone. When you have something that successful, it's very tempting just to ride it down to the ground. Any company worth its metal is going to try to come up with the next big thing. Maybe the next big thing is an iPhone, but a different kind. If that's the case, though, I don't see the 10 as being so very different. It almost feels more design different, really, than functionally different.
Yeah, there is that component to it. I think that if there's an influence from the Apple Watch, it's the knowledge that Apple is a design company as much as they are an engineering company. And there's the long, long conversation about how design is intractably intertwined with engineering. And okay, yes, that's true. But there is a point at which Apple is – they like things that look great. They like things that make your heart skip a beat, and which the watch then warns you about that your heart skipped a beat. But oh, no, you're in an Apple store, so it's okay. Honestly, I think it's even okay with Apple if it's the fact that we have this premium phone that has no bezels to it, that has that interesting tab to it, that really just feels and that really great stainless steel look to the back of it. If the only reason why people want to spend an extra $100 for it is because it looks like a beautiful piece of jewelry compared to the fairly utilitarian iPhone 8 and iPhone 7, that's fine by them. That's a good enough reason to do the iPhone 10.
Yeah. Okay. So
it can't be that different because the needs of the customer are still very similar, even if the design of the phone.
Yeah, I guess true. Yeah. And I'm also wondering maybe if well, for instance, the biggest change is Face ID. In fact, Ming-Chi Kuo now says that Face ID will replace Touch ID in the phones going forward, which would make sense, right? Yeah, that's no big surprise. But one of the key things about the Face ID is all of those sensors arrayed in that notch, which would incidentally be really remarkable for augmented reality. But for one thing, they're facing the wrong way. So maybe what this also could be is, okay, well, we want to perfect this. We want Face ID to work. But if we can get the cost down on these sensors and really kind of perfect it, maybe they'll be facing the other way next time. And that really will be an augmented reality phone. Is that
It'll probably be slightly different sensors, because this sensor is really attuned. Like, it's splashing your face with infrared light, doing a contrast dot pattern, and then pulling that out with a TrueDepth. They could put a TrueDepth camera on the back.
Isn't that what they need, though, to do really excellent
augmented reality?
This
is where I wish Alex were here, because I think you need some different sensors to do the room measurements.
I'm not saying it'll be identical. Like, you just take the whole module and flip it. But it's what you are doing, and for instance, I talked to the guy who works for a company that makes the proximity sensor in the iPhone. And he said the real challenge is not making these things, but making 150 million of them. And and the way you get good at that is you ramp the market up. And it was easy when Apple wasn't Apple and the iPhone wasn't the iPhone. With the early iPhones, you could slowly get better and better at making these
technologies. But this is every year. Like, Touch ID 2 chips were hugely constrained, and I think the A8 chip was hugely.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Anytime Apple tries to, it takes
and I'm
a year
wondering,
to ramp it up.
That's kind of also the role of the iPhone X. Is to start ramping up knowledge production skills to make something that is really different next year. Mm. In other words, it is an interim. It's still an interim product.
Yeah. My understanding is that the 3D technology that's in Face ID is not suitable for much of anything except for doing Face ID, which
is a lot of technology and a lot of expense to build in. Yeah.
Yeah. And nonetheless, I think that they're going to get a lot of information about how to do fast, relevant, and useful 3D scanning just from all the Face ID stuff that they do over the course of the next year. The reason Project Tango from Google is getting a lot of heat, saying, "Oh, well, see, you barely shipped a phone. It's experimental. Apple decided to put this on every single phone." They never really saw it as a way to unlock a phone. They were seeing it as a way of mapping a room. So that's why that hardware, it can sense that there's a doorway 8 feet away from you, and here's the dimensions of that doorway, or here's the sofa, and if you walk around the sofa, congratulations, it knows how much air that sofa displaces. And it's also why Project Tango phones look so weird, because again, that's such a big deal to be able to do that, particularly in a mobile device. But again, it's not that this is a limited technology that Apple is doing. It means that this is what they would not have put it in a Project Tango sort of way, saying this is a great idea. We think this is a great idea. We don't know what people are going to use it for. We're going to build some developer hardware, and hopefully developers will find a good use for it. They would find out, is there a way we can make it the phone easier to unlock? And then that's when the team that has always been pushing for some sort of 3D scanning on device would say, aha, remember you bought our company 5 years ago? Well, can we now have a meeting with somebody? Because we have a great technology for you like this.
Tim Cook, in his interview with the UK publication, The Independent, kind of echoed what we've been saying with AR. He compares it to the App Store. He says the App Store was greeted with skepticism when it launched. Think back to 2008, quote, when the App Store went live. This was there was the initial round of apps, and people looked at them and said, this is not anything. Mobile apps are not going to take off. And which people are saying right now about AR, by the way. I am. And then step by step, things start to move. It's sort of a curve. It was just exponential, and now you couldn't imagine life without apps. AR is like that, he says. It will be dramatic. So by starting the platform, starting the AR kit, starting the movement, getting developers into it, yes, initially, most of the apps are used once demo apps, but that's how it begins. And you need to seed the market and get people doing that.
It was like Passbook took 2 years before Apple Pay showed up. But then when Apple Pay showed up, they had the wallet in place. They had the authentication mechanism in place. They had the card mechanism in place. And you had people already familiar with the idea of having cards on your phone. And they do that a lot. They don't want to tip their hat at the technology they're going to release, but they need to get, like, size classes show up. And you think, oh, maybe what are they going to do with that? Then all of a sudden you have different size phones and split view on iPad and all these different things show up.
Well, it also explains why the A11 Bionic is so overpowered. Right, yes. There's really no need for that chip,
Well, there's a massive headroom now.
A lot of headroom.
Was pegging the A, the A10, and now it is very comfortable.
Yeah,
inside the A11.
So that's interesting.
Also, the AR efforts on other platforms are going to help out ARKit on Apple as well. It's when people fire up an app and they are expecting some sort of AR help from the app, and it's remember when it took a little while before the standard way to zoom became pinch and scroll, even on a multi-touch device. You'd see those one or two like old style apps where there'd be a plus and minus button, like actually on the phone and on the device. And you're like, oh, wow, this is like a steam powered app. Why the hell are you wasting my time with this great, great grandpa technology? And it's going to be like that too, when on both platforms for Android and the iPhone, people are going to be expecting, I'm using a mapping app. Why are you not highlighting the building I'm looking for? Or this is supposed to help me install my new stereo. Why are you not highlighting the jack on the back of this amplifier where I'm supposed to plug in my speakers? This is a waste of my time.
Yeah.
I'm on my way to work. Why isn't a Tyrannosaurus Rex eating the car next to me?
Yeah.
Right. Supposed to be eating my car.
Lots more to talk about. Let's take a little break. Andy Iannocco, Renee Ritchie. We're talking Apple on Mac Break Weekly. Our show today brought to you in timely fashion by Gazelle, because you're perhaps thinking, I'd like a new iPhone, but how much of a new iPhone can I afford? Well, you can afford more than you think if you go to Gazelle and trade in your old device for cash. Find your device, get an instant quote. We've talked about it before. Shipping is free. Payment is fast. Gazelle, of course, accepts Apple products. But they also take the Google Pixel and the Samsung Galaxy S8 phone. So you could trade your S8 in for a new iPhone 8, for instance. And then once you get there, you might be surprised to see that not only does Gazelle buy your old gear at very, very fair prices, you can also buy certified pre-owned devices from Gazelle. They save the best stuff they get for you. You could shop for iPhones going all the way back to the iPhone 5 through the 7 Plus, the Standard, the Air, the Mini, and the Pro iPad models. You can get a MacBook Air or a MacBook Pro for an amazing price. It's really, the time is right to buy these devices because lots of people are trading up. So there's great selection at Gazelle.com. And of course, yes, because they accept Samsung Galaxy phones for sale, they'll sell you their best Samsung Galaxy phones. Each device is fully inspected, backed by a 30-day return policy. They're sold without a carrier contract, but they work with all the major carriers. Gazelle, GAZELLE.com. Check it out. See what your old device is worth. You might be surprised. And check out the selections of certified pre-owned devices today. And if you need a little help buying, they also, of course, support Affirm financing. As you're checking out, you provide your basic information and you can get instant approval to pay in 3, 6, or 12 months in easy monthly payments that can be made through bank transfer, check, or debit card. Just check that box that says financing with Affirm as you check out, making it even more affordable for folks to get great phones. Don't miss out on getting the best value on certified pre-owned devices at gazelle.com. Give new life to your used electronics too. Trade it in for cash or buy certified pre-owned at gazelle.com today. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. We thank them so much for their support and for kind of democratizing access to expensive technology. Let's continue. I like this conversation. I want to kind of continue along this line. I do recommend people read the Tim Cook interview. I thought that was very interesting. Eddie Q, there it is. That's in The Independent. Eddie Q also speaking in an interview with an Indian publication called Live Mint. He says, people accuse us of not being innovative anymore. The questioner said, Apple historically has a track record of coming out with industry-defining products, but over the past decade, there's been a perception that the pace of innovation has slowed somewhat. What do you say about that? Eddie's response, no way. First of all, the iPhone is 10 years old. That is the last decade. The iPad came out after that. The watch came after that. So I disagree vehemently with that. And I think we've been incredibly innovative. That doesn't even take into account the work that's been done on the Mac, iOS, and Mac OS from that standpoint. I think where we've led the market. When you think the products we built over time, you own a lot of them, and you just assume every year was a new product, but it wasn't. You can't do revolutionary new products every 2 months or 6 months or whatever. They take time, says Eddie Q.
What he should have done, Leo, he should have just done like this, held them up, and then dropped them.
AirPods. All I need
the,
to
and
say.
And then Mike dropped the AirPods.
Yeah. AirPods.
Last year, boom.
Yeah. Apple's problem is that they're responsible for building everything that runs iOS. They're responsible for building everything that runs macOS, which means that's really hard for them to compete with every company in the world making Android phones and every company in the world making Windows notebooks. It's hard to when you got that kind of human power advantage on the other side. It's hard to look. I don't think that they're proceeding any less fast than any other individual company. But when you look at are they innovating the Mac the way that eight different companies are innovating Windows hardware? Well, no. Actually, bad example. They clearly don't care about the Mac anymore. But we talk about phones, for instance. They can't make one phone that is as different as eight different new phones that appear over the course of an entire year. And even there, they're really, really doing very well in that regard. In watches, it took them a couple of years to find the car keys for what they want to do with wearables. But goodness gracious, now that they found it, they're setting new land speed records. So much so that Google,
Google's basically stopped.
They have almost explicitly said that we're in a rebuilding year. We're basically trading some. We're trying to get some draft picks in the next round. Nothing is happening. That it's not. You can't see Google Wear watches in the Google store. They say that it's because that they are changing the store so that it's only like their own individual hardware, not third party hardware. But still, you can really see that not one mention really of Android Wear in the Google I/O keynote this year. I don't agree that Apple's falling behind in innovation. Again, however, they really need to demonstrate that they care about all of their product lines and not just the ones that really look good in commercials.
And there's no folding phone. Did you guys see the folding phone from ZTE today?
Yeah. I didn't see ZTE's, although Samsung's already said the next Note will be a folding phone.
But this is like two phones side by side, and you fold the screens together and you put it in a little pouch.
That's nuts. There's innovation and then there's just gimmickry, right?
Well, no, Samsung is one of the companies that is synonymous with gimmickry for me.
Yeah.
So, but however, just like they're a great company to do something stupid like an enormous jumbo sized phone that's almost as big as a tablet, and then you realize that actually this is incredibly useful. I wish my phone were bigger than that.
Now, the difference between what the Axon M is, which is just basically two phones together. And what Samsung says they're going to do with the next Note, which is because Samsung makes these OLEDs that are flexible. And so that's an I don't know if I'd run to buy one. I want to see how the hinge
I heard works. A rumor about a folding Apple phone like 3-4 years ago, but it was one of the 1,000 no's.
Yeah. I just want to say in response, though, to you holding up the AirPods and say, innovate my ass, I would hold up this. This is something that hasn't been innovated on in a while. This is a Mac Mini. Actually, it's a pretty old Mac Mini.
Is it the skeleton of a long-dead Mac Mini?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But October 16th, yesterday, was the third anniversary of the last update for the Mac Mini. Talk about a product that hasn't been declared dead, but is barely
alive. Yeah, that's the frustrating thing. If they just said we're no longer making it and took it off the store, we'd be super angry. But we would at least know the fate of this device.
Yeah.
It's when it's like it's not dead, but it's not alive. It's Schrodinger's Mac Mini that it becomes really untenable. Like, do I buy one? Do I keep using it? Do I have faith in this as a platform? I don't know what's happening. Like, just it's the worst of all worlds.
I think that if they were to drop the Mac Mini, that would be a really bad sign for the Mac in general. I would be very, very concerned about the entire future of the Mac if they were to drop the Mac Mini. So I'm
going to say a tiny modular computer. I would love that.
It would be Mac Mini, meaning if they were to, I said before that it's very interesting to me, the thought of creating something with a form factor of an Apple TV, but it runs Mac OS, even if it was running like a Intel, like i3 or an i5 CPU instead of something that requires a fan. That would be really interesting to me, but they need to have a way for someone to buy a box that does not have a $800 screen attached to it, built into it. So I can simply buy it, plug it into whatever monitor I have, plug it in my keyboard and mouse I have. The fact that they don't have a Mac that costs less than the cheapest iMac, that seems like a viable product, means that it's a very, very bad sign.
The thing about this is, and this is where I think Apple gets bit by this innovation thing. Any PC manufacturer that made this thing would just update it with the latest chip. It's not hard to do. Update it with the latest chips. You don't have to change the form. You don't have to do a whole lot. You could put these new Coffee Lake chips in and get amazing speed bumps with minor redesigns. So it's kind of inexcusable. It really is. It's a case of ignoring the Mini because it wouldn't take a lot to update it.
Intel has this line, the class computers they call NUCs. NUCs that are essentially like a little bit bigger than the Apple TV, but they are really, you can put in whatever CPU you want, i3, i5, i7. You can put in whatever memory you want. It's certainly not, it doesn't give you the 1,000 ports that you might want on a tower machine. But for something that is your little desktop at home, that is essentially the version of the notebook that you would ordinarily keep plugged into the screen of the keyboard at all times, it's wonderful. Or as something that you want to keep plugged into the living room TV at home to be a media server, to be a game machine, whatever you want to do with it, it works great. And you can get them for less than $500, and they're quite wonderful. If Apple just were to say, we're going to just flat out steal this idea, and we're just going to make the case much, much cooler, and we'll put Face ID on it anyway, just to make it look that much cooler.
12 South has introduced
anything.
12 South has already upgraded their new Mac smell candle. We've got why can't Apple upgrade the Mini? This is Mac candle number 2, the Inspire.
It's sort of everyone's greatest strength is also the greatest weakness, and Apple's got this culture where they have this idea for this next generation product,
it
creates stasis.
It creates absolute stasis.
They become frozen, and instead of we can't do this yet, they don't do anything. And it'd be much better if they could figure out some way of just doing what you said. Here's the next generation chip. Yeah. Here's a few USB-C/Thunderbolt 3 interconnects. Go crazy. We'll have something nice for you in 2018. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
We are expecting, in a couple of months, a new iMac Pro. That's going to come out in December.
And then next year, Mac Pro and maybe Mac Mini.
Maybe Mac Mini.
10 p.m. Pacific time on December 31st. We are expecting
Seven of them will ship.
They did that with the trash can Mac Pro, right? You could order it, but you were lucky if you got it by January.
I think, as long as five people get it, it's counted a win.
They're going to open like a pop-up Apple store on the very, very tail island of the Aleutian Island chains so that they can get down to the last stroke of 2017 to say that, we've sold three of them, two of them to actually Apple employees who flew out just for the thing, but one of them to iFixit.
Apple was asked by Senator Al Franken to talk about the security and Face ID. I actually was not concerned. I do think it's important to be upfront, and I expected a white paper from Apple. Franken says that he's happy with the response, in particular, not just for consumer privacy, but to protect against racial, gender, and age bias. Yep.
The white paper is out, by the way, Leo. It came out a couple weeks ago.
Oh, it is out. Okay, good.
Yeah.
So that white paper really should answer anybody's questions about this, right?
Yeah, it's very thorough.
It's a good one.
There aren't even many pictures on it. It really is technical. It says here's exactly how everything works. It gives you other piece of information, such as how the dot pattern isn't even consistent from phone to phone to phone. So it can actually tell the phone that projects that dot pattern, if let's say you were able to feed it the wrong data back, it would be able to say, wait a minute, that's not my dot pattern. That's someone else's dot pattern.
Yeah, replay attacks. ID.
So this must have come out when I was on vacation because I did not get.
But what the scary part of this, Leo, is that they have they have a neural network that's designed to read your face and a neural network that's designed to fool the neural network reading your face to make it better at reading your face. And I don't think they know what these things do anymore. They've just got like this adversarial relationship that in computer time spans infinity, where they're fighting with each other like these forces of dark and light. It's like two pets that are taking care of themselves.
Yeah,
now.
it's it really does show how openness is almost like a marketing feature, because these are questions that people were having. One of the things I was wondering about is what they're saying, that it sort of learns if your appearance changes, it will figure out that your appearance has changed. But how does that work? Well, if let's say that if it fails Face ID five times, whatever, it will just say, okay, we're turning off Face ID. Now we're going to have to demand that you plug in your passcode. So if you then plug in your passcode you plug in the correct one, what happens is the neural net says, oh, so I guess those five failures were actually correct. I'm going to use those five failures to learn what was different between these scans and the ones that I have on file previously. So that's why, like, if I haven't shaved for a couple of days, it might learn that. If I change my glasses to a different style of glasses, if I buy a purple cap instead of a yellow cap, for instance, it's supposed to it will gradually figure out what the variations are over time. So it really does seem like they thought this out very, very carefully. They did the anti Samsung version of Face ID, which is to assume that people are going to try to fool this, and also assume that the system is going to screw up, because the two worst ways to do a Face ID system is one that lets people in without being you, and the ones that are such a pain in the butt to use that you're not even going to bother to use it at all.
Did I tell you my customs agent story yet, Leo?
Not yet.
So I was going through customs on my way to the iPhone 8 briefings, and I go through and the guy says, why are you here? And I said, for the iPhone 8 launch. And he said, oh, Apple is terrible. They are taking pictures of all our faces. It's going to lead to a massive face data bank and CCTV scanning, and it's an end of privacy.
Wow.
And I'm sticking with my passcode because it's unbreakable.
Wow. Now, you wouldn't think he'd even... that's really
interesting. I was in the Nexus line. Okay, so Nexus, for people not familiar, in order to get to this custom agent, right in front of him is either a fingerprint or iris reader.
Right.
That he sees you scan into.
Right.
Before you walk up to him.
By the way, they're storing that in a database.
That's probably Equifax.
That is not nearly as secure. Actually, I'm really impressed with what Apple's doing with Face ID when it unlocks a device and when it doesn't. So when a device restarts, by the way, or you know how sometimes you're asked for the passcode, that means at that point it's thrown away the Face ID every 48 hours if it hasn't been unlocked, or when you turn the phone off entirely, it throws away the keys and regenerates them to improve unlock performance and keep pace with the natural changes of your face. It augments its stored mathematical representation over time. I'm reading from the white paper. So with a successful unlock, it may use the newly calculated representation if its quality is sufficient for a finite number of additional unlocks before that data is discarded. So now it has a new representation. It's going to use that. But if it fails, but the match quality is higher than a certain threshold, and you immediately follow the failure by entering your passcode, it then says, oh, let me take another picture, and says, okay, I'm going to augment my data with the newly calculated representation. In other words, it learns from failure as well as from success.
It learns from its mistakes.
I can go on. This is quite impressive. And
there's only one major change between Touch ID and this, and that is that it does keep the original scans of your face inside the secure enclave, because Apple will be updating the neural engine. And if they didn't do that, you would have to go through the face scanning every time the neural engine updates, whereas they just do a replay of the scan files to update the new neural engine and then go from there.
You certainly wouldn't want to redo the setup procedure, you know, at random times. That would be kind of annoying. Good. I'm glad they did release that. That's fantastic. What's the story about how it avoids being racist? Could you explain that?
That's public knowledge. They talked about that at the event. They went through and they did sample scans of a wide variety of people, and they did, these were people who were licensed them to do it and agreed for them to do it and were probably compensated, because I know some people are concerned that there was some initial concern that Apple was just using either libraries of images or people's own images, but no, they actually had a project set up where they brought in people of an incredibly wide different variety of backgrounds and cultures and areas and geographies, and just scanned as many of them from as many angles as possible to start feeding the neural engine on this database, on its chipset.
So that was one of the things Senator Franken was worried about. By the way, he has apparently been satisfied by Apple's response. HP and Google face recognition systems didn't work with people with darker skin.
Or they produced results that were not appropriate.
Oh, yeah. Google Photos likened black people to gorillas. That's particularly offensive. So Franken was a little bit worried about that. He asked about algorithmic bias. What steps did Apple take to ensure its system was trained in a diverse set of faces in terms of race, gender, and age? And obviously, you just explained that. And how is Apple protecting
its They do admit to having problems with very young faces. Like, I think it's under the age of 13 because they don't have as many unique characteristics as older faces
do. They all look like Winston Churchill. That's babies. I'm very impressive. While you've used it, none of us have lived with it yet. And so that will be the ultimate test, is whether it is as easy, as effective, as fast as Touch ID.
But I forget who said this, but there are lots of Apple employees now. Yeah. You see it all over social media. Yeah. They went into open carry right after the event, and they're all using it. And Tim Cook and Jeff Williams and everyone at Apple is using it to secure data that's highly important and highly sensitive on their phones. So that's a good show of faith in the system.
Well, of course, one person who is using the iPhone X is Tim Cook. He was speaking at Oxford, and it just slid right out of his pocket, proving that, in fact, the glass back is slippery. He just flipped. He looked at a notification notice, flipped it over. I don't know if he was wearing particularly slippery slacks. It fell out and made him pull his socks down. I don't know what that connection.
He did. He did like the lower Picard maneuver.
Is that what that's called, the lower Picard? Okay.
Well, the Picard maneuver is so.
Okay, it's the lower.
That's when you sit, the lower. When you sit down, the captain's chair, and the first thing you do is, in a dignified way, prevent your upper tuner from blousing out by pulling it down.
Yes, you want a little tight tunic.
It's Pence funny Picard. That Zapruder Tim Cook a lot now. Like, there was another picture of him wearing a gold Apple Watch with a Hermes. Apple Watch band. He's got to realize that he's open to this now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Let's see. I'm saving crack for last. So as anybody would, you know. But
that's a security thing, folks. Leo's not actually saving real.
A little later on, we'll address crack. I want to get all of the other stories out of the way though before we delve into that. Apple apparently was having talks to buy a health company, Crossover Health. Those talks are now over without a deal. It's a venture-backed startup that runs on-site medical clinics. So the question, and Megan brought this up on iOS today, is Apple thinking about building and running on-site medical clinics? I don't know. What do you think? What were they looking at Crossover Health? Why would Apple want to get into primary care? That sounds like a recipe for disaster.
Well, it puts them into a network of local providers. So if it were simply a way to direct people towards where we have now telling the user, we have now reached the limits of what I can help you with being an inanimate object. Please go to I've set you up a medical genius bar appointment at this address right here. There's a lot to be said for simply having a network of local things, local places
for data.
So, yeah. Yeah. Well, for data, but also if your ambitions are to go beyond simply being a gadget that tells you what your heart rate is. I mean, if they could do a version of the Apple Store only for health, so that all these care locations are still good, people who are existing customers would still be existing customers. They would see no change in care. But if you have an iPhone, if you have an Apple Watch, that device could then interact with your real world care in a much more intimate way, because they can build the entire legal infrastructure for how to contain this information, how to deploy this information, how to share this information between locations. So again, it depends on how big their ambitions are.
Right.
Remember, we keep having to go back to the idea of how silly it seemed that they would have an Apple store in every single mall. It does seem kind of silly that they would get into healthcare. But if you think of it less as a Apple Store for health on the marquee, and more of a, oh, by the way, here is a way that we can test out a larger, more ambitious health program without having to, again, own doctors or own medical people. Just simply say, here is how we would build a digital healthcare system if we had the opportunity to do so. And then you could then use that example to sell it to larger healthcare organizations. Once you have data saying, here's how it affected patient healthcare, here's how it affected cost of treatment, then that's an interesting way to do it, particularly if you have $230 billion sitting around.
Well, but they didn't acquire them. So it shows what they were thinking, but doesn't show what they actually are planning. They also, by the way, are working with the FDA to create ways to fast-track digital health software through their approval process. That's one thing holding Apple back is FDA approval is hard to get. And to date, nothing that Apple does has FDA approval, am I right? There are devices for the Apple Watch and Apple phone, but not made by Apple.
And they commented before that, you know, Jeff Williams runs Watch at Apple, but he technically runs Health, and Health is going to be a much bigger range of products and services than Watch one day. And one of the reasons for that decoupling is that they could make devices that would have to go through FDA approval that might be too long for a process for consumer wearables. Right. But there might be a version of Apple Watch that is far more tuned to health than the current version. And maybe it takes a little longer to come to market, but it'll be specifically for people who need that product. And it sounds like if Apple is exploring this, it could be Apple Retail for Health, which would give them a huge footprint, at least in the United States to begin with. But it also could be a place for Apple to do Research Kit and Care Kit and to have products on the shelves and to interface with customers around primary caregivers, you know, sort of just to have feet on the pavement, you know, everywhere that, because health, Tim Cook has commented several times that health is a hugely important and hugely valuable business for Apple.
Yeah. Well, potentially very, very valuable if they came up with something like a non-invasive blood glucose meter.
Yeah. I mean, particularly in the United States where it's not the government deciding how much people are going to be paid for certain health services. There's a lot of money in it, which means that there could be a lot of money in providing those services to people who make money off of these things. But imagine how interesting it would be to have a stock Apple. They would still have a stock Apple Watch, but there is software that you can get access to they can get access to via prescription, if that makes sense, where there's a version of the Health Apples. There's a Health Apple store that once your primary caregiver has given you access, authorized access to a specific app, you can then download this app that will give you specific health advice based on your heart rate readings. That will, every time that your watch comes near your Wi-Fi base station, will send this information directly to your doctor, particularly giving him alerts as to here's an anomaly that we need to keep an eye on. It is a big deal to get certification, even just for an experimental technology, something where you're saying we want to do a study with 1,000 people. Here are the 1,000 case studies we want to do. Here's the risk that's going to happen to these people by participating in the study, and here are the benefits. That's an enormous amount of money, an enormous amount of bureaucracy. They basically have to set up an entire healthcare company within Apple just to run those studies. I have family members that work in those industries where they work on developing technologies, and I'm quite familiar with what they have to do to just to get a simple experimental study done. So yeah, if that's part of their ambition, that's good. They're going to have a tough hill to climb, and they seem determined to go try to climb it.
Steve Jobs, very famously with the introduction of the iPhone, said, "No one wants a stylus."
You see a stylus, you blew it.
How are we going to communicate this? We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No.
No.
Who
no.
wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck.
Yuck. Yuck. Well, then
he's demonstrating like a kitchen appliance. Like, who wants to mess with both the floor cleaner and a sweeper?
But wait, just there's too much. More.
There's no question the pencil is a success, although I suspect kind of a limited market. Certain people use a pencil. Rumor is that Apple, according to the Korean Herald, which I don't know if this is a very valuable rumor source for Apple stuff, claims the Apple engineers have been working on a new iPhone device that comes with a digital pen for launch in 2019. Credible?
I mean, it's
You use it.
No, I love the pencil. My understanding is that when Apple was making the pencil, they could have made it work with the iPhone year one if they wanted to. I mean, Tim Cook famously said pencil is great with iPhone and iPad, and people picked up with that because he likely has an iPhone in his lab that does exactly that.
Right.
It's a question of, are they going to release it? The only thing for me is that that pencil looks really big next to an iPhone.
Yeah.
And I don't want a tiny pencil because it's like in art class, you're the last kid to get to the desk and you get the tiny broken pencil and you're like, I hate to draw with it. So I don't want a tiny little stylus, but I think there might be some middle ground for an Apple Pencil too that would better suit both the iPhone. I'd love it though. My favorite thing about the Galaxy Note is that it's a small little Wacom tablet that I can hold in my hand and sketch on. Right. And I'd love that ability on an iPhone.
Copy386 is pointing out quite rightly that Jobs was arguing against a stylus being mandatory. Like, that's how you have to use the device.
But that's Steve. He believes that nobody wanted video on their iPod. Well, he didn't believe. He said nobody wanted video on their iPad. And Apple was not going to – sorry, on their iPod. Apple was never going to make a phone. They were never going to make a tiny tablet.
But he might not fought against a stylus as an adjunct. That the OS is completely touch, completely functional with touch. But it's nice to have sometimes a pointy thing that you can draw with or write.
Well, in that same interview with Tim Cook where he said that – I think the same interview, he said Steve would change his mind. Famously, he'd have a completely solid, like, never going to do that.
Right.
That someone would give him a compelling argument. Then he'd act like he was never again.
I was always in favor of styluses.
Small tablets, they're great. Eddie, ship that.
A week later, he'd be singing that he is going to let you down. He is going to take rip heart and desert you.
iTunes on Windows,
he is going
to
make you cry.
Have you reverse-rickrolled us, I think?
Exactly. Given how old the Apple Pencil is at this point, there's certainly a lot of room to do an Apple Pencil, too, that is perhaps the size of a regular pencil. And so once you start to make it something that you could stick in a shirt pocket without a third of it sticking out from the top, once you master this amazing technology such as the cap that goes over the tip, again, I know that they've got at least three radians of the entire spaceship campus is now focused on trying to develop technology to have a cap that would put over the of the point of the pencil, you know, explosions and people bodies being pulled out and covered up because they don't want to know that it's happening. I mean, if they made it like a more the size of a regular pen, it's not a deal breaker to simply say, here is a really, really nice pen that you will stick in your pocket. No, it will not go inside a hole inside the pencil. No, it will not be mandatory to have it inside a charging case, so it's on a loop like a little notebook on the side of it. People carry around pens all the time. They will be happy to carry around this beautiful looking $100 or probably $130 pencil alongside it, particularly once it starts to justify the expense of your $1,000 iPhone 10. I'm like Renee. I'm a huge fan of the Galaxy Note. I'll have it for a month and then I'll forget it exists for the first week. But then as soon as I'm reminded one day, suddenly it's like, now it's the day I have to pack it up and send it back. Say, but I want to be able to like take quick notes on the screen without having to even unlock it. And why can't my phone do that?
Don't worry. There'll be another phone. Although that is the nice thing about the Note. It's really the only major phone with a stylus.
Yeah.
For now. Justin, Magic Leap has announced it has achieved its $500 million Series D funding round. So more money pouring into Magic Leap, an AR technology that apparently is amazing, but no one has seen, and those who have don't talk. And I don't know if there's anything to say about Magic Leap except that they keep getting more money.
Yeah, it's my understanding is it's a hell of a demo.
Yeah.
I mean, if you get the demo, you will walk out sort of kind of shaking and vibrating at how good it was. But it's my understanding is that it's not the ideal will be, see this little bar, little metal bar that's in here. Well, that's the entire projection system. Right now, it's more like here is these thick wad of cables that go to the table full of machinery that makes it work right now. And that obviously the biggest deal is to try to figure out how to wait to make it so that you can actually walk around with it. But yeah, I have spoken to somebody who has tried it firsthand, and that's how she described it.
It's universally.
You just walk away.
Yeah,
you just walk away saying, "I want
must have."
She makes it feel like she's just tried heroin for the first time, and just all I want is to try it again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wish them luck. They've got plenty of money, that's for sure.
There you go.
Yeah.
You don't need profits. You just need more. You just need stockholders that want in. That's really all you need.
Yeah.
Ask Twitter.
Yeah. a couple of court cases. China has gone to court seeking a ban. I'm sorry. Qualcomm has gone to court seeking a ban in China for Apple iPhones, expanding the world's most vicious contract negotiations into into China now. We've talked infinitely about this story.
Did you see them trolling Apple last night on their Hong Kong 5G presentation?
No, what'd they say?
They had a slide up saying 5G coming soon to these Android phones.
Oh, yeah.
Android only or something.
Well, they actually, we have ads for them, and they are a sponsor of some of our shows. I think we've had ads on this show touting their gigabit LTE chip, which is only on Android. Apple uses, you know, Apple won't use it. So if you're going to, you know, go that way.
Yeah, Apple is not, what's the right word? Apple takes the radio slowly. They're usually, like, it took them a while to get LTE after the HTC Thunderbolt came out. And, they're conservative. I mean, that's a good word. They seem to stay a step behind when it comes to radios.
So I have nothing to say about this suit only because I don't really know. We talked about it on Sunday, and the consensus seemed to be it's all just a very bitter contract negotiation that will be resolved.
It's companies trading money so lawyers can get cars.
Yeah. Nice. Glad those lawyers are driving those nice cars. Apple did lose in court in East Texas, where it's not hard to lose in court if you're a big company. The Vernet X patent case is over. Apple will have to pay $440 million. This is, I think, the third or fourth decision.
Yeah, and I believe they're appealing it again anyway.
Oh, no, really? Wow.
I think they are.
Wow.
Well, this goes to VPN and to FaceTime. It's one of, like, when people wonder what's happening with FaceTime, is that Apple had to re-architect it following this patent, which I believe was for fax machines or something equally ludicrous.
Ironically, all four of the Vernet X patents have been invalidated by the Patent and Trademark Office, but they still can sue because the invalidation is not legally binding until all appeals have been exhausted. So it's one of those, I don't know. I thought we weren't going to see many more cases, patent troll cases in East Texas, but they continue, and it's going against Apple. It's gone against Apple all along in this one. One of the reasons I'm told that patent trolls like the U.S. District Court for Eastern Texas is the judge there and the juries there are very much in favor of the little guy against big business. So we'll see, because the Supreme Court recently ruled that patent suits can only be brought now in districts where the company is based. So I think it's kind of the beginning of the end for the district court in East Texas. Steve Wozniak has a new project, Woz U. Not clear how much Steve is involved in this. It's an online learning platform focused on both students and companies that will eventually hire those students. Woz U, based in Arizona, and they hope to launch physical locations in more than 30 cities around the globe. Woz, in a prepared statement, which means probably somebody wrote it for him and ran it by him for approval. Our goal is to educate and train people in employable digital skills without putting them into years of debt. People are often afraid to choose a technology-based career because they think they can't do it. I know they can, and I want to show them how. My entire life, I've worked to build, develop, and create a better world through technology, and I've always respected education. Now is the time for Woz U, and we're only getting started. It is true that Steve went back to college and got his teaching credential and taught high school for some time after he left Apple.
Yep.
So
the best equipped classrooms in the entire country.
You can get the Woz U app now on iOS by Coder for Rent, LLC. I don't know exactly what it does. I'm always nervous about this kind of thing because we've seen a lot of these schools kind of turn out to be somewhat scammy. On the other hand, MOOCs like Udemy are just doing great. So I'm not sure. Not sure. I'd have to talk to Woz.
Exactly. I don't know anything more about this than what I read in the release. But it's an interesting it would be an interesting time to do something like that in a positive way, given that there's so many companies that are kind of scamming, you know, for-profit organizations that are scamming people into education that is absolutely of no use to anybody, and just leaving them heavily in debt. They're really just, you know, federal loan mills. That's really about it. But if you were to, given that technology is one of those areas where they don't care so much about the college degree so much as the experience that you can bring to the job. It's almost like being an artist. Show me what you've done, and that's what made me decide to hire you or not. It's a good opportunity to say we're not an accreditation school. We are just going to give you the skills and then feed you into a job where you can get the experience to get the next job. So if, again, I don't know anything about this, I'd like to learn more about it, and I would certainly hope that he wouldn't attach his name to something that wasn't joyful and positive.
Yeah, absolutely. Although we know Woz has a hard time saying no sometimes too. So I don't. That's the problem. Is I just don't know how tightly integrated he is with this. Well, here's his video. Wait a minute. Maybe he is. Here's Steve Wozniak. I just downloaded the WozU app. Let me turn up the sound here and see what Steve has to say here.
This is Steve Wozniak, and I want to personally congratulate you for taking the first step to finding out what career path in the high-tech world is best for you. See you on the other side.
See, he's not talking about, you know, learn gun repair, reading ventilation and cooling.
All right, I'm gonna take the assessment test here real quickly, just to
draw
see
tippy
if I am
with an Apple pencil.
If I am ready, yeah, exactly.
Are you applying, Leo?
I'm applying. I need some
skills. You should
be a visiting
professor. You should be a visiting professor.
I don't know anything about this crap.
Are you going to learn how to punch BASIC out on a paper card and make it run right the first
time?
That
I can do. That I have a
learn
lot.
Learn how to make international long-distance phone calls for just pennies.
It is an iPhone-only app.
I do like the fact there's so many places where you can get a basic tech education for nothing or
for
next
free.
To nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's if you really, I mean, honestly, the number of people that I've talked to that says that in many places, the definition of a great programmer is the ability to the knowledge of the URL stackoverflow.com and the ability to cut and paste.
Oh, by the way, that has now turned out to be a real problem, because a lot of that code, I just saw an assessment that a lot of the best answers or the highest ranked answers have terrible code, and it's propagating a whole generation of really bad security flaws. All right, I'm ready for the assessment. Shall we take the assessment? You can help me with this. Start assessment. How long have you been coding?
I think the app is going to be really impressed that you wore a tie to the interview. Not all these like younger people understand
I'm
that
serious
you dress
about
for the
this.
Job you want to have.
So I've been coding as a hobby. 45 divided by 9 equals 12 minus what? 7? Okay, I think I know that one. All right. So what mathematical symbol can be put between 5 and 9 to get a number bigger than 5 and smaller than 9? Well, that would be, what? To get a number bigger than 5, plus?
No.
No? Bigger than 5, but smaller than 9. Oh, smaller than 9. 5.9. How about that? Wow, that was tricky. Data structures like a binary tree and linked list are built using composition. Okay, I don't know. I'm guessing that one. 1 gigabyte is equal to 2 to the 30 bytes. Wow, this is a hard one. Andy, come on. Help me out here. 2 to the 20 bits. I feel like it's 2 to the 20 bits. I don't know. Huh? 30? 2 to the 30
Can't
bits?
See.
Okay, our studio audience agrees. If New York can be encrypted as PGYAQTM, how can you code the word Charlotte? Well, I need pencil and paper for this, but it's a simple cipher, obviously. Let's see. I don't want to write this all down.
No, they're all C D E J C T.
You're good. Andy, you're good.
Oh.
T was enough. What about recursion is true in comparison with iteration? It occurs.
There's two words that have never been in my kitchen. Generation.
Is that right? Yeah, right. It incurs a function call. Every recursive program can be. Yeah, I'm gonna say yeah. 3, 6, 11, 18. What is the sixth term in the sequence? 5, 7, 3, 5, 7, 9, 27. I'm gonna get 100% because, good Lord, there's more. In the final stretch of a marathon, you quickly ran by the person in second place. What place are you in? Oh,
second.
I ran by. Oh, because I'm now second. Thank you. If friend is coded as humjtk, how is candle written using the code? How did you do that so fast, Andy?
They're all two letters off. This one, I think the first is two off. The second is three off. The third is IJ.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
You increase the index one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a good way to do it. I was going to write out the whole damn alphabet, but that's a lot faster.
See, I scared my school system because I was – I don't know if I have a high IQ, but I was really, really good at puzzles. So I would do scarily well.
So candle
well
would
on
be
IQ
C, D, E, F, right? Oh, no, I guess E. C, D, E? Wait a minute. Friend is H, F, G, H. Oh, yeah. R is R. Oh, no, this
first
doesn't work. R, S, T, U. I is I, J, K,
L. I did not know there'd be skill testing questions today.
You increase it by one.
You increase the index by one. So it'd be
F, G, H. So C, D, E. And then A, B, C, D. So it's E, D. I think we have to say it's E, D. Next. Which design pattern ensures a shared instance of an object is created once and reused multiple times? I'm going to say that is a factory pattern. What do you think? Or is it a builder pattern? Or it is a singleton?
I don't know.
Which it's a design pattern that ensures a shared instance of an object is created once. I'm going to say a factory pattern. Please enter your phone number so we may contact you. Okay, so yeah, I have just drawn Squiggy the Squirrel, in effect. All right. Do you think they'll contact me? See, I don't like
phone
that. Number, right there, I don't like
phone
that.
Phone number is a hard no. That's why I let Google give me a burner number for.
I have shown a strength in data and mathematics. Based on these results, we recommend you study software developer with WazU. Demand in your current location suggests a focus in Java. A career counselor will be reaching out shortly to help you get started.
Your test results suggest that perhaps you had a friend help you turn on the computer. Now tell them to never let you have a computer again.
Put into the workforce.
Wait a minute. Waz has a message for me.
To see you.
Waz?
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You are now on the fast track to get out into the workforce to make a difference. I hope to see you after you graduate.
You know, I have no opinion on WazU, but I'm saying that any game developer that does not hire Waz to be like the in-game like AI advisor.
I love him just popping up like that. That's awesome.
Well,
so how long before my phone rings, kids? What do you think? Let's take a break. When we come back, release the Kraken. I've been waiting to say that all show. Our show today brought to you by Video Blocks from Storyblocks. We've talked before about how great. Oh, my phone's ringing. Oh, wow. Look, it's a text message from Waz. You're awesome. Due to high demand, it may take our career counselors up to 48 hours to return your inquiry about WazU online. So now they're texting me.
There you go.
Hard stop, right, Andy? Hard stop. No, not getting my phone number.
Yeah.
Video Blocks is a way to really improve your video background on your website, your podcast audio, put a hero image on your blog. Studio quality stock video for a fraction of the cost with Video Blocks by Storyblocks. And when I say fraction of the cost, I mean it. You can download all the stock video your heart desires from their member library, including 115,000 studio quality HD videos, After Effects templates, motion backgrounds, or more. New content is added regularly. There's always something fresh to download. Everything you download is royalty-free, so you can use it for commercial and personal products forever. It's yours to keep and use forever. No outdated footage. No more footage with an ugly watermark. I know sometimes people save money by doing that. Don't. Video Blocks is used by the best. And get ready. I told you it was affordable. Go to videoblocks.com/macbreak.com. and get all the stock video you can imagine, $149 a year. A year! 90,000 customers, including NBC, National Geographic, the History Channel, the Travel Channel. These are really great, high-quality stock video clips. $149 a year. They also have a marketplace, which is awesome, so that these are 5 million additional videos that you buy directly from the creators of the video, and you save 40% if you sign up, and the artists take home 100% of the sales price. So this is a case where VideoBlocks is just providing access. I love this. To a marketplace, and the artist gets all the money. I love that. VideoBlocks.com/MacBreak. All the stock video you can imagine for $149 a year. We've been using it. We love it because we were spending a lot more. I mean, way more than that for stock video. VideoBlocks by StoryBlocks. We thank them for their support of MacBreak Weekly. So Monday, I get up. I got a day off. I think I'm going to relax. I'm going to take it easy. And the first thing I see is, oh no, WPA2, the Wi-Fi encryption we've been recommending for everybody, has been cracked. I know I know KRCACK, which stands for
key replay.
Key reinstallation attack. And I know Steve Gibson's going to dive into this in great depth. But it has something to do with the four-step negotiation.
The third step of the four-step handshake can be replayed.
And you get the nonce.
To reset the key. Yeah, the nonce.
And once you get the nonce, you're in. What that means is somebody who can get – first, they have to have physical access to the Wi-Fi network, right?
Yeah, they have to be in proximity to the Wi-Fi network. Yeah,
sitting on your doorstep.
They can't do it remotely. Like, they can't do it from across the
country.
They need
to be a neighbor.
To be within your Wi-Fi range, yeah.
Or whatever. Then, now, correct me if I'm wrong, Renee, but my understanding is they would have the same kind of access that they would have if you were in an open access coffee shop and you signed in and they signed in, right? At that point,
so the story keeps mutating, and it seems to depend a lot on a lot of different things. When it originally came out, it sounded like exactly that effectively the full encryption was gone, and you would be as vulnerable as you would be sitting at a Starbucks on an open access point. And some people get confused like that because some coffee shops, they give you a username and password, and they use WPA2. We're talking about the ones that don't force you to enter a username or password, just an open Wi-Fi access point where anyone else on that network can also see what you're doing on that network. And now it's sort of like, well, they can do some kinds of attacks, but they can't do other kinds of attacks. And they can change this, but they can't change that. They can read this, but they can't read that. I think just to be prudent, we should assume that they have pretty good access once they get on your network. I think that's the safest thing to assume at this point.
Okay. And it's an issue, first of all, because our advice has been for years. Remember when we first started using Wi-Fi, people said use WEP, wired equivalent protocol. Then WEP was shortly thereafter cracked because it wasn't well designed at all. But ever since, we've been telling everybody, everybody's been saying, all you need to do to secure your Wi-Fi network is turn on WPA2 encryption. It works. It's effective. Now it's cracked. Like WEP was much the same way WEP was cracked. Patches are going to be a problem, not because I would imagine. In fact, I've already talked to the folks at Eero because they're a sponsor and they have it in beta. They have a patch already in beta. Has Apple patched it yet, or are they about to patch it?
It is in the current beta. So the iOS 11.1 beta for both developers and the public has a fix in it. And that means it'll roll out to everybody within the next few weeks.
It's just a little ways out. Windows is apparently not vulnerable. Android and Linux, depending on your version, could be. Android phones have to get an update. Google has an update. They will be pushing it out soon. Just everybody responsible is saying, oh, yes, apparently it's easy enough to fix that they're beta testing the fix right away. Some companies were notified ahead of time. Monday was the public announcement. But, of course, the security researcher who found
this. Except BSD kind of jumped the gun, which I think is going to lead to some controversy moving forward. They put out a patch that you could have diffed and sort of seen what the vulnerability was. If you were
And there are patches for many Linuxes. Google has a patch for Android. So patches are rapidly flowing out. You will want to patch your router. Here's the problem. Your Internet of Things devices.
But two problems. One is if you have older hardware. So, for example, the latest Samsung phones, the Pixel phones, all of those will be fine. If you have a much older phone, the odds of you, especially on certain carriers, the odds of you getting an update are really low.
The estimate is about 41% of Android phones will never get updated.
Same with routers. Like if you have a really modern router from a good vendor who's paying attention to all those things, like those will be updated. Apparently, the AirPort is not vulnerable to this attack. I wonder if like Microsoft, Apple didn't follow completely the standard, and that ended up being lucky for them.
Isn't that
when it comes to this?
Wow.
But there will be some, like if you've had a 10-year-old router and you don't even like in the manufacturer you can't find anymore, you probably want to replace that router.
But it doesn't have to be your router that gets attacked, right? It could be any device on your WPA2 protected network.
The clients, yeah.
Which means all of those IoT devices, most of which don't get updated ever, are a real problem. Right?
Yes. No, totally. And especially there was some concern over the security cameras that sometimes come bundled with your modems that treat it, because they're a bundle, they treat it as an encrypted network when it's not. They just basically say that it must be a trusted device and don't even bother encrypting it. And if you get into that, again, like it's unclear what they could do. Maybe they can make your printer put out a bunch of garbage, or maybe they could try to put malware on your device, or maybe they can't really do anything at all. We don't have all the details on a per device basis yet. But anything that you can't positively identify as safe, I think just out of prudence, you have to decide is not safe at this point.
And since you don't know the state of public Wi-Fi access points, whether they've been patched or not, you probably don't want to use Wi-Fi out when you're out and about. You might want to disable Wi-Fi on your iPad, your phone, and your laptop for now, right?
I'd certainly disable automatically connect to known networks, at least for the next month or two. But I think that my understanding is that if you're using VPN, it's not going to really affect you.
Yes.
You should have been using VPN anyway.
Yeah. Well, that really makes it even more important. In fact, I got a couple of days ago, and I've been using it now. I'm a big proponent of the tiny hardware firewall. I've been recommending them for a while. That basically, this is a great solution. They just came out with this. They call it I can't remember the name. It's a funny name, but it's $30 or $40. It looks like a USB key. If you want to use it with a Mac, you have to use an adapter. You can't use it, obviously, with a phone or iPad, but I can tell you how you can use it. And what's smart about this one is this looks to your computer like an Ethernet dongle. So the computer already has a driver for it. It goes, oh, yeah, you've got Ethernet. You join the Wi-Fi network, even the unsafe Wi-Fi network. It works with captive portals because you can do MAC address spoofing. So you can actually join the captive portal on your computer and then put that MAC address in this device. And from then on, your connection is coming through this USB port. It's coming through a router, but then you can turn on VPN. The drawback is this comes from Wi-Fi Consulting. You have to use one of their services, either Hotspot VPN or their new Black Cloud hosting, which I really like because each person is on a separate VPN server. It doesn't slow it down too much. If you use this full time out and about, you'd be fine. Plus, you turn this into a Wi-Fi access point. So now you can have your phone. Basically, you set up as a Wi-Fi access point, this phone, the iPad and everything, join this one, this VPNing everything, including your laptop, your access point, your phone, and your iPad. So there are solutions out there. So a VPN will protect you. Is that correct?
I believe so,
yeah.
So yes and no.
If it's a good VPN.
Yes, which is increasingly hard to find.
There's some really...
If you roll your own.
Yeah.
Because we found out that some that we thought were trustworthy have been turning over records they said they didn't have.
Yeah.
So it's incredibly murky. If you have your own VPN, you can switch to Ethernet, but maybe they're already on your network or they got into your network through your kid's Nintendo game or something. I mean, like the whole thing, it's nightmarish. I don't think that's an alarmist thing to say. It's nightmarish at this point, and it's going to take a while before we're through it. There's a couple of good news points here. One is that it's backwards compatible, so we don't need WPA3. We just need them to patch this problem. The other side is when you patch the clients, you're reasonably safe. You should patch everything, of course, but once a client gets patched, it's relatively safe to use that client. And the third thing is most people aren't hot targets for this. Like you might have a prankster in your apartment building who downloads some freeware, you know, exploit code and does make your printer do silly things. But the chances of you being, you know, sought after by a state agent using his techniques are probably minimal. So
yeah.
I just get those updates done as fast as
it's
he can.
It's a problem that, I mean, it's public now, but I don't think the tools are out yet. So you don't have to worry yet about the script kiddies, but that can only be a few days away.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to say that on a day-to-day basis, I'm less concerned about being targeted by a foreign agent than I am by some kid in the next house over who is probably like I was when I was 13 or 14 years old, where it's like, oh my God, you mean this code could actually do this? Wow, I wonder if we can do that instead. And then once you are on someone else's network, gee, I wonder what resources I can find on this other person's network without being necessarily malicious, just being a teenager without a sense of how, no. The fact that you didn't actually break a window and go into my house and take my TV set and leave with the TV set, that doesn't mean that you didn't violate my home by doing this. Or people who will say, gee, what a bunch of interesting photos Andy has on his server. I'm going to take them and then put amusing comments on them and post them on Reddit. That's the stuff that I'm more worried about. I'm worried about, again, a kid who is generally a lot more clever than I am, because they're spending 9 or 10 hours a day, like I might have been when I was a teenager, playing with this amazingly cool toy and learning incredibly cool stuff, the amount of obsession that only a teenager can apply towards a new adventure. So I was doing things as a teenager that might be termed very illegal today. They were innocent in my own head back then, but again, going through someone else's computer 1,000 miles away just because they left a door open doesn't mean that they were inviting people inside. That's a hard thing for kids to understand.
So that's
why things like this kind of get me concerned.
The security researcher who discovered this, Maddie Van Hoff, has a website, crackattacks.com, K-R-A-C-K, attacks.com. There's a video there you can watch. It's also on YouTube that shows the use of a Python script to implement the attack. He has not released it, thank goodness, especially because a Python script would be easy enough for somebody to, you know, kind of weaponize. He says it'll be released, though, once everyone has had a reasonable chance to update their devices. I'm not sure what that means, you know, how long that will be. But the key here is, as you said, Renee, that we don't need a new version of WPA. Yeah. You can patch WPA. You want to make sure that your router is patched as soon as possible. So check with your router manufacturer, see if they have a timeline. I think Ubiquiti's been patched. Meraki's been patched.
Enterprise Ubiquiti. I don't know if they're commercial.
Enterprise has been patched, right.
Yeah.
So the patches are very few so far, but they will be pouring out, I'm sure, over the next few weeks. Update as quickly as you can. Update your So it's not just the routers. The client and the access point have to be patched. And then that becomes the big issue if you have devices, and I bet you almost everybody does, on your network that are not getting firmware updates. And that's where it's going to really be a big issue. So you're going to want to check, you know, if you have a Ring video doorbell, you want to make sure they're updating.
Yes.
If you have, IP cameras in your house, you want to make sure they're getting updated. All of that must be updated. And anything that doesn't get updated, your echoes have to be updated. You know, anything that doesn't get updated must be removed. I think either removed from your network and put on a separate network, as Steve has recommended for years, because IoT is so unpredictable. Yeah. He generally recommends putting IoT not on a guest network on your same router, but on a separate routing network. And I'm going to be doing that tonight.
This is one of those things where it's likely we won't understand the full ramifications of it for some time to come, just because of the breadth of the
Big story, easily the biggest story of the week. And again, Security Now is coming up. Steve has already said he's going to be talking about this, so there'll be a lot more details, more technical.
And I know some people are sensitive to us saying that this is a big deal and say, well, it's just security alarmism. I tend to be very conservative about raising alarms over security because I think a lot of it is sensationalized. But I don't think you can look at an exploit based on WPA, which all of us have been saying is secure for years, as being anything short of something you need to pay absolute attention to for the immediate future.
You could wait. I mean, if you don't want to be sensationalistic, you could wait until ransomware is injected into thousands of people's systems and, you know, I mean, until stuff happens, then it would be cause for fire, hair on fire. But this is a flaw that could open the door for that kind of thing fairly
easily. And the worst part of it is that you are only as secure as the worst technology you have on your network for this. It's not the best. Yep. The Google stuff, the Apple stuff, the Microsoft stuff might be fantastic, but there's a ton of other stuff on a lot of people's networks that will just obviate all of the good security practices that those companies employ.
Yeah. If anything, you try not to scare people. This is just a good opportunity to remind people of what best practice, what the best practices are, and why you should not be scared of every device you put on your network, but be aware that every time it's like changing the locks in your house. You don't just simply buy whatever's cheapest at Walmart. That will change the security of your house. The fact that you've changed a lock, and so long as you keep reminding people that. There are things that there are things that you can control. You can make these things are designed to be updated to become more secure, to solve problems when vulnerabilities occur. That there are activities that are dangerous and you should try to avoid. And if you can't avoid them, try to use these solutions like VPNs that will at least mitigate some of the danger. You don't want to get people to run screaming and naked into the streets. You just want them to. Give them the tools so that they will hear something like this and they will know what they're supposed to do with it, do with this information, how they can make themselves more safe.
Yeah. We will talk much more about this in a little bit on Secure, about half an hour from now.
Can't wait. It's going to be a great show.
Matthew is back. Matthew Roberts, who does he and Duncan Sinfield do the great 4K drone tours of the spaceship campus. This will be familiar to you, Renee, because you've been there, you lucky dog. But the campus, Apple Park, continues being improved. And here is the latest drone footage. It actually almost looks like it's, kind of finished. There's still bulldozers in the middle as they finish the landscaping up. You didn't get to see much beyond the Steve Jobs Theater, I presume, Renee.
No, we didn't get to see you could see the donut Apple campus, too, in the distance. But it was huge, but it was still in the distance, like probably a 10-minute walk away. Yeah.
Still putting in trees. Look at all those solar panels. Man, that is really cool. And actually, you could tell, Johnny, I've looked at the design, in a macro scale, because it is beautiful on the roof. A lot of buildings don't look so good on the roof. It is beautiful all around. The estimate, no one knows, but the estimate is almost $500 billion cost for this. I don't know if that's possible, but that can't be right. Wait a minute.
Minimalist design is expensive.
Did I miss?
They can have an NCAA football program for that amount of money. That's ridiculous.
I might have misread that.
Is that the visitor center's top? I can't tell from that angle.
I want to say not half a trillion, but
That is visitor
42
center,
billion.
Yeah.
There's the visitor center. Yeah, that's where
it's a great view from up there.
That's where you go to get your badge to go to the event. Is that right? The visitor center.
Well, the visitor center, you go in and the visitor center is the first thing you hit, which has the Cafe Max, but it's not a full one. It's more like a coffee shop Cafe Max.
And that will be open to the public?
Apple Store.
Oh, and they're in the they're in the distance. Yeah. You can see the Steve Jobs Theater where you are. So you get some idea of how far away. And they want to keep the unwashed press away from the main campus, of course.
Yeah, and also I think that's a very smart move. They know that they're going to get a lot of people who are going to make pilgrimages to the campus, and it's nice to I don't think people necessarily who visit want to walk in and be able to be greeted by Johnny Ive and be giving a Willy Wonka tour of the design lab, but I do think that if you give them, here is a place that has a big Apple logo you can take a selfie in front of, here is a place you can get a cup of coffee and spend $40 on a t-shirt, that's really all they want. And by giving them sort of that distraction, it really solves a lot of security problems that sometimes they were only able to awkwardly handle at one infinite loop.
Really looking pretty. Beautiful, beautiful job. Let me get somebody estimated the cost of Apple Park. I obviously it's not half a trillion. That's insane.
Johnny's fee. I mean,
I am
$5 billion.
Looking forward.
Okay. Let me get that.
There
right.
You go. That's
The ring alone. The ring alone was $427.6 million. That was That was just the spaceship. The theater, $180 million. The parking structure is $113 million. This is a guess from BuildZoom, which is a company that helps users find general contractors. So it's just a guess. It's much like the bill of materials guess you see sometimes on how much it costs to make an Apple phone.
Well, wait till you see Apple's margins when they sell this thing, Leah.
Yeah, no kidding. The gym, $16.7 million. Maintenance building, $2 million. That's a lot for a shed. So the total cost around $5 billion, give or take. That's, you know, not, it's not half a trillion, but it's not insignificant. On the other hand, if you have more than $200 billion in the bank, not undoable. I want to thank Apple for donating $1 million to wildfire relief, matching employee donations. Of course, as you, many of you know, we had some horrific wildfires, not just here in our area in the wine country, but also in Southern California. The death toll was is horrific at this point, and number of houses. The high school my kids went to, already 50 families lost their homes in that high school. And since that high school only has several hundred students, that's not
horrific.
That's horrific. It's terrible. And many of our friends, we keep hearing of friends and family. We have a massage therapist who comes in and gives massages to the staff every Wednesday. She lost her home. She was able to save her dogs. Her family's safe, but she lost her home. And so there are many stories like that. If you go up to Santa Rosa, just the feeling of shock is palpable up there. So thank you for that $1 million donation. Apple's done that before with iTunes donations to the Red Cross and so forth. So
yeah, Puerto Rico, Texas.
Yeah, yeah, there's plenty of need.
There's so much
out
need.
There.
Yeah, and I think they're doing the doubling for employee donations as well. Still,
that's what this says. Yeah, the $1 million is matching employee donations. So that's really, really fantastic. Let's take a break. When we come back, picks of the week, my friends. But first, a word from Rocket Mortgage. My pick of the week. When it comes time to get a home loan, to buy a new home, or refi, to take some money out of your home, you want to go to the best lender there is, Quicken Loans. And especially if you're like me and you want to do this all online, because Quicken Loans has Rocket Mortgage, an entirely online mortgage approval process. See, Quicken Loans realized the mortgage experience wasn't really keeping up with the times. It was kind of dated. It needed a little technology. Rocket Mortgage makes it easy to apply. You apply very simply. You understand exactly what's going on through every step of it. And by the way, when it's easy, I mean easy, you go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. They're going to ask you for a little bit of information. They're going to say, okay, I see we have, you give us permission to check your bank accounts and your assets and so forth. You give them permission and that's it. You don't have to provide any paperwork. They just permission. They do it all for you. And then instantly calculate based on income, assets, and credit which home loans you qualify for. You pick the one that's right for you with a down payment you like, with the term and rate you like, and you're done in minutes. In minutes, which sure makes it easy to buy a house. It's always nice to say, yeah, I'm already approved for a loan for this. Rocket Mortgage, just take the stress out of applying for a loan. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. We thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Time for our picks of the week. Andy and Akko, kick things off for us.
Really huge update to BB Edit. BB Edit 12 was just released just last week, and it's huge. It's not, and it's you might even call it I don't know, BB Edit 12S, because it wasn't, if you run it, it's not as though they threw away the old BB Edit and totally rebuilt the experience from the ground up, but they rebuilt everything behind the user interface from the ground up. BB Edit is one of the oldest oldest apps that's for the Mac ever. It wasn't something that's just been evolved every 2 months. That's how they got to 12. It's been around. There are people who I think who can drive right now who were not yet born when the first version of BB Edit was released. And as you can imagine, because it really is the premier flat text editor and programmer's text editor, it basically incorporates everything that makes it more awesome. And as a result, over the years, it means that there's the solutions that Barebone Software came up with to provide features came before Apple caught up with Barebones and created their own solutions. So based on a huge amount of the effort that went into this latest version is to bring it all up to Cocoa, remove the stuff that was, again, their own solutions and embrace Apple solutions. The end effect is that a lot of stuff that you are supposed to get for free with every piece of software, like Split View and stuff like that, is now part of, you get for free with BBEdit because, again, you're using the standard macOS classes and libraries. But there's also a whole bunch of, as usual, a whole bunch of tweaks that just make whatever you do manipulating text so much easier and so much simpler. A lot of what I use BBEdit for is I have like a whole bunch of text files that need to be munged into a different format or into a different I've downloaded, let's say, a 500K text file. Imagine a 500K text file, and I need to extract from that all of the data points that I need for a piece of research that I'm doing. I can do it via text search. Use stuff that I could always do it with BBEdit, but instead of doing it now with like four or five steps, I can do it with one step and now make that repeatable because I have a text file that says, here's the stuff I'm looking for and here's what I want you to do with it. And we'll just simply use that as the basis. And it could do things like transform things in the clipboard so that if I'm preparing HTML, for instance, and I want to take a piece of text that I've just taken off of a website, but I want it to be formatted the way I want it to with my CSS markup and its own div tags and stuff like that. It's no longer pasted into this and then again run a grep or run something on it. It is simply the fact that it was on the clipboard and then I pasted it from the clipboard into this document turns it into what I want. And so imagine every single thing you do as a programmer or just simply as someone who works with text for a living that involves you having to do the same stupid set of steps over and over and over again. And imagine this app understanding what you want to do and just doing it for you. And also giving you every single piece of hands-on equipment, hands-on tools that you need just to get through the day. There's a reason why this really is the standard editor for people who work with text, whether it's people who are publishing to the web or people who are writing code. There's a reason why there really is no major competitor to this app. And that's because the team at Barebones does nothing but listen to people who use this tool and do nothing but work their butts off to make sure that these people are very, very happy and get through their work day in the most linear manner possible. It's $50. I think there's an upgrade. There's a cheap upgrade if you have bought like an old version of it. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's on that list of apps where if it is on your Mac, at some point you are going to use it and you're going to thank God that you actually put this on the machine.
Love Rich Siegel, love BBEdit. He's been on the show before, and we're really glad to support him. And that's amazing. He's got to 12 versions now of BBEdit. That's really...
Yeah, and he is a very, very good friend of mine, so I should mention that. But that also means that I am aware of like all the lunches and all the dinners that I have not had with him for the past for the past couple of months because it's just nothing but getting this update out. And once again, it's some of the hardest work to get through. It's easy to be the person on the iPhone team who's we're removing the bezels and we're replacing the home key, the home button, and we're doing Face ID. It's hard to be the person who says, my team is responsible for integrating this new modem software so that in the 18 regions in which it can't get maximum bandwidth on non-LTE, it will actually shift to a new version of LTE. Nonetheless, that work is as hard as anything else and as important as anything else. And that's so much of what went into BBEdit 12. I've been using it for the past couple of weeks and it's familiar, but still new and wonderful. And I can't recommend it highly enough.
Yay, Rich. Good job.
Yay, Rich.
Yay, Rich.
Yay, Rich.
Yay, Rich. Renee Richie, what's your pick?
So my pick was going to be BBEdit as well, and I'm glad that Andy beat me to it because he did far more job. I've kept saying that I'm embarrassed by how little I use a BBEdit, but I think that also is emblematic of just how much you can do with BBEdit. Like I use it to write in, but other people use it to create miracles in. So I'm so happy that Rich and his team.
Yeah, I just buy it to support Rich, to be honest with you. And the few times a year I use it, because I really love it that you can have a command line inside it, which means you can edit your bash scripts and stuff and your commands. And I love the text factory. So it's not unusual. Three or four times a year, I've got like a spreadsheet of Christmas card mailing stuff. And I want to kind of put it in the right order. BB Edit, there's no better tool for me.
And they got that new columns feature now, so you don't even have to change it from being a spread.
Yeah.
I just use it like I have these long lists for articles that I just need to change things on, and there's no other way but then using like their sort of grep. I call it grep for dummies, is what I do.
Yeah.
It's like I need to change all this to that. And it works, and nothing else does it.
Yeah. Yeah. I read the whole book on grep, but I still use BB Edit's grep. I really like it.
It's so great.
Your pick of the week, sir.
My backup, I have two. One is Phil's Coffee, which I know, you know, you, Leo, are probably super familiar with. Anyone in the Bay Area is super familiar with. I go there whenever I am, you know, anywhere near Cupertino or the South Bay Area, and I fill up my suitcase with as many bags of Filtered Soul and a few of the other ones as possible. They have really, really good coffee. It's such good coffee that when I give it to other coffee aficionados, they say, "Hot damn, where did you get this coffee from?" Cannot recommend it enough. It's not like the fancy espressos. It's for people who really want to filter down their coffee and have a
Helpless Corgi says, Phil's will really get you wired.
It is so.
It's a high caffeine brew, huh?
You go in there. If you're not familiar with the place, I was super confused the first time I ordered. I walked in and I thought you'd go to the cash, but you don't. You go up to your individual barista who then makes you what you want, has you taste it, make sure it's to your liking, more cream, more sugar, less sugar, no sugar, all that kind of stuff, and then make sure you're happy with it before you walk off. And it's just, there's a line up there, tech people, sheriffs, everybody just waiting for their cup of Phil's.
And Phil's with a Z.
And you can order from it. So that's what I do now because I can't get to the Bay Area often enough. So I'll order a few bags, especially for the holidays, and give them away. And everyone's super happy.
Can I just say that is one hell of an endorsement, because this endorsement of this product is coming from somebody who several times a month is crossing international borders in and out of the United States of America and being scrutinized by people that know that drug mules, A, make a lot of international trips, and B, often pack the drugs in coffee so that they can't be sniffed out. So to Thanks, love Andy. This coffee so much, there is the result there, risking that kind of harassment. That's good coffee. It's even a non-coffee drinker like me is going to be paying attention to that.
It is so good. My other pick, I mentioned it in passing last week, but a lot of people asked me for more information. It's a program by Ecamm, which is another awesome Boston area developer. Two brothers work on the product, and it's called PhoneView. And all it does is let you pull stuff off your iPhone and push stuff back on your iPhone. And it's great for doing those sorts of spring cleanings we talked about. It's also great if you want to back up your SMS messages or your iMessages, because a lot of times people don't realize that those, in many cases, up until now, are trapped on the device. And if you get rid of the device, you lose it, you know, you'll get back some from your backup, but you might not get back all, or you might want to clean out your messages, but you know, keep a record of them going back. You can pull out photos, you can pull out music files. What we used it for was game data, because Georgia was updating her phone, and she made it quite clear that if anything happened to her game save data, the world would not long have me. So we just made sure we copied off all the game save data, copied it back on her. It was totally fine. No one was killed in the process of doing it. And it's a great utility to have if you have a Mac and you like to tinker around with what little file system there is on your iPhone.
Thank you, Renee Ritchie. I've already mentioned my pick, but I'll give you a little more information. It's the Tiny Hardware Firewall, given crack and the problem with crack. A lot of people are looking at VPNs. The company that does the firewall, or rather the VPN on this, is Wi-Fi Consulting out of Washington, D.C. They've been doing this since the 90s. I totally trust them as a VPN provider, partly because they're not cheap. It's $91 a year for the VPN. I would not use a free VPN to save my life, because if it's free, there's somehow they're making money. So I think $91 is very fair. It's a few cents a day, 6 cents a day, something like that. But there's another advantage to it. This hardware that you put between you and the internet really is fantastic. This is the new one I just got. They call it the Boudica, and it is a USB key. It has it shows up on your computer as an Ethernet adapter, which means it works on everything, including Linux, Mac, Windows, because everybody sees USB Ethernet adapters. That's a very simple thing to support. But then it connects to the Wi-Fi, and at the very minimum, it's a router. But it has two Wi-Fi radios in it as well, which means you can connect to coffee shop Wi-Fi and then use it with the second radio to connect your iPhone and iPad while your laptop is also protected. This is the interface. I've actually connected it to this computer and logged in. And so the trick is to associate it with wireless. This one, by the way, doesn't use Hotspot VPN. It uses Black Hole Cloud, which is their newest VPN service. Everybody on it gets a unique VPN. They don't use OpenVPN. They use a different VPN program called, I want to say, is it Vernet? What is it called? Anyway, they consider it a more secure VPN software. You get a hardware firewall just by virtue of using it. So right now, I'm connected to the internet via protected by a firewall, by a router. But then you can also turn on VPN. You can turn on Tor. You can even turn on ad blocking. So let me show you how quick and easy it is. I'm going to scan for the Wi-Fi. I see I was using it at home. I see Twit Guest, 94% signal. I'm going to type in the, you don't have to hide it. It's just dots, the password. You can, and for full security, disable the wireless network, which I've done here, because having a Wi-Fi radio on might be a cause for concern. So if you just want to use it on your laptop, it's wired. You can name the wireless network. I'm going to now connect to our Brick Guest. And once we've connected to our router, I will be surfing the internet through the Wi-Fi. It looks like an Ethernet connection to this Windows machine. And then I can also do additional things like turn on ad blocking, turn on VPN, and turn on Tor. So let me connect through the Brick Guest since I've set it up. Connect to VPN. You want complete anonymity. You can connect to Tor. Oops, I guess it didn't take, so I probably typed the password wrong. And ad blocking is built in. I really love this. The device itself is inexpensive because it's hardware, and it's just a little old thing. You can just carry it around. I think you get additional protection than just using a software VPN. If you want to know more about Black Hole Cloud, you can go to blackholecloud.com. But if you want to get the tiny hardware firewall, this is the one I use. It is at tinyhardwarefirewall.com. WireGuard, that's what they use. They use the WireGuard software, which they say is faster than OpenVPN. By the way, my benchmarks do, I mean, you're always going to have overhead with VPN, even more if you add Tor to that. But my benchmarks are, it's quite usable. On our gigabit network, I was able to get, what was it, yesterday about, or Saturday, about 10 or 15 megabits, which is more than enough to surf the net and listen to audio. Probably wouldn't want to watch video through it. Very nice solution everybody should have in their briefcase from Tiny Hardware Firewall.
How does it work through a challenge page? Like when you're at Starbucks and it says, oh, click
so
this button.
So clever. So clever. So this works with all captive portals. So what you do is you join the challenge page on your computer. But then you get your computer's MAC address and assign it to the device. Then you turn off Wi-Fi on your computer. This device is connected now. And because it's the same MAC address as your computer, in almost all these captive porter situations, it goes, oh, yeah, 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 I know you. And it lets you through. And so now you're using Starbucks. You went through the captive portal on your computer because you had to, but you're using Starbucks through this. So it's a really, that's a very clever idea. I'm being told by WebDude in our chat room that because of the encryption in this, it's only shipped to U.S. addresses and APO, FBO addresses. So you cannot get it outside the U.S. However, if you want something similar to this and you can't buy it, this is the easiest way to go, $40, $90 a year. You can make one with a Raspberry Pi, and we have a know-how where we show you how to make a Raspberry Pi router with firmware. By the way, interestingly, DDWRT has already been patched for the crack exploit. Yay, open source. So you could put a DDWRT on a Raspberry Pi and use that, and you can use Tor and all the same things. You just have to roll your own. You can't. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are other providers, maybe in Canada, places like that. Sorry, Renee?
I said it's a Raspberry Pi is a gift that just keeps on giving.
Isn't that amazing? $35, yeah. You know, amazing. Basically, this it's interesting. I mean, this is, you know, it's a little computer. It's got a DSP chip in here, software, memory, firmware. It's $30. It's similar to a Raspberry Pi, but it's fast.
It does machine learning for firewalls.
It's fast. It's very fast. Hey, that wraps up this gripping edition of Mac Break Weekly. Our thanks to Renee Ritchie. Go to imore.com. They have a very good explanation of crack and what to do about it. What is it? imore.com/crack. Is that it?
Yep.
Who did it?
Yeah. Jerry Hildenbrand. He's
nice.
Awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
imore.com/KRACK. And, of course, great podcasts and the best content. Really fabulous stuff at iMore.com. Thank you, Renee. We appreciate it. The new yellow, iMore.com. And for years, my favorite Mac guy with the sideburns and the hat. I even got an Andy hat just so I'd feel like part of the.
Oh, actually, I actually got like a haircut like wow. The other day, so I probably should have tried. Usually, and of course now my hair looks awful because I've been wearing a hat all day. Usually.
You look like you could get radio reception on that hair.
Usually the hat is a gambit against, you know, oh man, I can't, my hair does not want to go in the same direction today.
Thank you, Andy. Chicago Sun-Times, of course, where he is an esteemed writer on technology, and his website, CWOB.com, gives you links to his Instagram and all his others, Twitter and all his other places where you can follow Andy's great stuff and his other podcasts, because he does a great, don't tell anybody, Android podcast called Material Relay.fm. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Renee. Thank you all for being here. If I only had the mutton chops and we're a lot younger and more handsome, I would look just like you, Andy.
Indiana LaForce.
A little bit more bitter, too.
Yeah, I need to be a little more cynical. No, you're not. He says smiling. You're not bitter. I just need to spend more time in diners. Then I'd be smiling, too. Join us every Tuesday right after iOS Today. That's the new time for iOS Today, 9 a.m. Pacific. And we come on about 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can watch live. Join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. You can even be in the studio. Just make sure you email us. We want to make sure we have a seat for you. Studio isn't open as much as it used to be, so please email tickets@twit.tv to let us know, and so we can let you know if we're here and all of that stuff. If you can't watch or be here in person, you can always get the on-demand downloads. We call them podcasts, confusingly. They're available at twit.tv/MacBreak, or I guess it's twit.tv/MBW, or on YouTube, or better yet, find your favorite podcast program, like the fabulous Marco Arment's Overcast or Pocket Casts or the Twit apps. There's some really good Twit apps like MyTwit available. And subscribe, because you don't want to miss an episode. Thanks for joining us. But now I'm sad to say, time to get back to work, because break time is... Hold on. Bye-bye.